started.
You're in Ergo Investigator Radio on BBSRadio.com.
Well, hello, this is Peter Leonard for another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. Dr. David DeProspero is not with us tonight. He's teaching a gynecology course at the local school. But we are also joined by our favorite Rich Nicodem and
Howdy.
Steve Roscoe.
Hello.
So we have some interesting stuff on the horizon, I see. Huh?
Not really, but go ahead.
Well, it was a busy weekend, wasn't it?
I'm exhausted.
Of course.
That's because you weren't there.
And of course, we're referring to Scarecon. I can't believe it's been 3 years. This was our third one. That's amazing.
Well, and following tradition, it was bigger and better than it was the previous year. So, a lot of great things. Linda Blair was there. She had a line most of the time for people trying to get in. Ernie Hudson was there, and of course there were so many guys dressed with the whole Ghostbuster suit and packs on and stuff walking around.
I've never seen that many proton packs in one place in all my life.
No, neither have I. And in addition to that, there were a lot of other fine celebrity guests. There was Scout Tyler Compton from the Rob Zombie Halloween movies and the Runaways. There was Marilyn Burns, the original woman from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There was Priscilla Barnes from Three's Company. Greg the Hammer Valentine, pro wrestler. We also had Kylie Szymanski. Probably the name doesn't sound familiar, but she played the governor's daughter in The Walking Dead this past season. And the list goes on as we'll go in more detail with more and more celebrities. But the event was a success. If you missed it this year, don't worry, we'll be setting up things for 2014, and we'll make it bigger and better.
I have to brag. I mean, I was sitting with one of the celebrities there that is a volunteer, and I just couldn't help be touched by all the people that came up asking me for my autograph and a copy of my book. Kind of feels good to know that we're that well-known locally.
Yeah. And
I kind of felt embarrassed, but I mean, I'm nowhere near the celebrity status of who I'm sitting with.
No, nothing to be embarrassed about. Who Pete is referring to is Heather Donahue. She played the girl in the Blair Witch Project. He sat next to her, and then next to Michael Williams, who played Michael in the Blair Witch Project. And he was helping out with them handle the sales of their merchandise and photographs and taking pictures. One of the things we do at Scarecon is with a pool of volunteers that we get. We assign people to celebrity booths to assist them with photograph requests, to assist them with distributing their merchandise and selling their items. And so Pete got moved around a little bit. He actually spent a little time with Linda Blair, too.
That was the highlight of my convention life.
Folks, he's lying. He's completely lying.
I will say my favorite celebrity of the convention was Fred Williamson. That made it worthwhile, just to go there and shake the hand of a legend.
Yeah.
I was always a big fan of his work, just to get to meet someone like that. It's an amazing opportunity.
And he had a Super Bowl ring on. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I saw the gold chain. That's Super Bowl.
He actually has two Super Bowl rings. He only had one on. It was the shape of a football. It was gaudy. But he said he had another one that was so gaudy, he said he refused to wear it. So this is a guy dressed in a leisure suit and a diamond football ring.
I think I impressed him because when I went up there to talk to him, I told him I was a big fan of his work, and right away he snapped back. He's like, "From Dusk Till Dawn?" No, I'm like, "MASH? Star Trek? Like Scott Starsky and Hutch? You're the Hammer." I think that impressed him that I actually knew some of his filmography.
Yeah, I remember the most, to be quite honest with you, from Starsky and Hutch. That was such a huge show. I was such a huge fan of it when I was a little kid. Watching that, my best shows were Emergency.
Loved Emergency.
Three's Company. SWAT. And Starsky and Hutch. And who can forget Beretta and Fantasy Island.
And you can go ahead and add Adam 12. When I was a kid, that was one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
All those plus Dragon. Adam 12.
Dragon. Yeah, folks, we're showing Dragon. You our ages here on Paranormal Investigator Radio.
I'm 22.
Pete's 22 times 2.
No, they're all very charming people. And one thing I've learned when sitting with these celebrities and volunteering, thank you to Rich, is try not to talk about their movie careers. I had the most interesting discussion with Miss Donahue there about soap making for at least a good half hour.
Yeah, well,
it just shows you their interests are beyond movies, and sure, they're more than happy to talk about that.
They're real people. After they do some movie stuff or television stuff, they go on into the work world and get real jobs, and they get a life lesson, paying bills and doing different things. And Heather Donahue, I think, if I'm not mistaken, actually became a marijuana farmer.
Yes, and I bought her book. I began reading it. It's actually an interesting read.
So it's the people in California, folks, are entrepreneurs. Many of the celebrities that we've had at Scarecon are entrepreneurs, not only in acting, they go into directing and film production. They start film and sound studios. They get involved in making wine and own wineries, pot plantations for municipal purposes, not just to grow it and get high, folks.
To each his own,
exactly.
Right. And she was even telling me about that, what's required for that. I mean, we won't turn this into the paranormal pot hour, but...
Actually, it might be fun to discuss sometime, but folks, we need to be prepared for that and prepped. So, yeah, we would have to go outside for a little while and do a little Cheech and Chong and come back. And,
so, believe it or not, it's actually like having a pool in upstate New York. You have to have a fence that's a certain height that people can't have access to, so on and so forth. I mean, it was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, she was actually, folks, Heather Donahue was probably one of the nicest women that was there. She was very engaging, friendly, and when you sat and walked by, she asked you how you're doing, asked, so what do you do, and, you know, that kind of thing. So she was pretty engaging and concerned about asking people about their lives. And when you walked by, she always smiled and stuff. And you know, some people stop by and were, I call them tire pickers. They're kicking tires and weren't buying any of the celebrities' merchandise. She still made good chat with them and things like that.
And what's wrong with people? They'll walk up to a table, look down at all the stills, and they're, I don't like that movie. I hated it.
Yeah.
And they walk away. It's like, please, keep your comments to yourself.
Upstate New York, Pete. It's our mentality up here. That's how we are. Instead of pleasantly just smile and say thank you like they do in most areas and walk away, we always have to insinuate a comment and, oh, that movie sucked, and walk away.
Just got to get that shot.
Actually,
Marilyn Burns, too. She was another sweetheart. I'm not sure if that's a descriptor that'll get me in trouble, but very nice lady.
Yeah, she was. I have an autographed photo of her. And it's kind of funny because she said, Rich, would you like a photograph? I'll sign it for you. You're with the convention. I want to give you something. And I looked at all her photos, and every photo was a picture of her tied up. And I'm like, this is going to look weird. You know, I'm going to put it up on my wall, a picture of her tied to a chair, or tied to this, or tied to that autograph, and people are going to think I'm, like, really weird into weird stuff. So I found one where she's on her hands and knees crawling covered with blood, and I was like, I'll take that one. And then I ran into the same issue with Linnea Quigley. For those of you who know, she's a screen queen. And the best-known role you'll probably remember from was Return of the Living Dead, where she was a naked girl who danced on the tombstone in the graveyard.
Oh, I remember.
Completely buck naked. So, she said, Rich, would you like a photograph? I'll autograph and give it to you. Every one of them, she was naked, showing her breasts and everything. And I'm like, you know, as much as I'd love to have any one of those photos signed and not take one of each, I just thought, again, probably distasteful to stick that on my wall in my office where my wife would look at it and say, what the hell is that?
I'm going to say Mrs. Rich probably wouldn't be too thrilled about that.
Yeah. No, and little kids, you know, walking by the booth and there's her pictures of them. Or topless on top of the table.
I remember that.
Oh, of course, yeah. The actress from The Human Centipede there was the jaw dropper for the convention.
Yeah, she was a very beautiful young lady. Very beautiful.
That's what happens when you have three guys sitting around microphones talking.
Yeah.
See what you missed, Steve?
Yeah, but folks, the paranormal pants component was pretty big at ScareCon this year. A couple of our friends and colleagues in the paranormal field were there, such as Britt Griffith from Ghost Hunters. He made an appearance again. It's always a good time to see Britt. And our friend Dustin Parry, who we've done some events with and investigated with from Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunter International. He was actually there. He had a great time. He actually texted me afterwards and enjoyed himself.
And if you look through our archives, he was on one of our first shows.
Yep. yeah, I don't know if you listened to it. That's back when we were having some definite technical difficulties with the incoming calls, but we've got that fixed now. Also, Joe Chin from Ghost Hunters made an appearance. There were some paranormal groups that were there in addition to RIP.
John Brightman was there. Apparently, he's going to appear on several episodes of Ghost Adventures this season.
Yeah, good old John Brightman. Wicked. Hey, John. Wicked. But, he was there, and, there was some other paranormal people there. But all in all, it was a great event, and we look forward to seeing it next year, hopefully bigger and better, and hopefully we can get some bigger names there.
So while we're on the Scaricon thing, David and I did a panel discussion with John Brightman and also Scott from another local group.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually amazed at the quality of the questioning that came out. Normally you get the, what's the scariest thing you've ever seen?
Are ghosts real?
But these are actually really in-depth questions, and if you don't mind me putting you guys on the spot, I'd like to actually regurgitate a few of them.
Go for it.
To see what you what you think. Actually, the first question, the guy actually said, I don't believe in the paranormal. He's like, what do you think a ghost is?
Want to take that one, Steve?
Well, that's sort of like what we did at the panel, too.
I would think that the standard answer would be a disembodied soul from a body. That's what would be my answer. Who is not at rest for one reason or another. And that's what I would guess.
I would say that I believe in the paranormal, but, you know, being an engineer by trade, by education, I'm very skeptical, so I didn't believe in it. And I heard so many stories about it from, you know, my colleagues like John Zaffis and Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson. And all of them show me evidence and tell me about stories and investigations. So finally, I sought out the truth, and I wanted to find out really what's out there, and I wanted to see it for myself. And that's, honestly, folks, how I found RIP. And then within a few investigations, I had a couple of my first experiences that I saw something, another instant I heard something, and in several instances I experienced something. So with what those specific things, I do believe in the paranormal. And I do believe that when people die, the soul goes someplace, and some travel on to, you want to call it heaven, and then some, I think, get trapped here. Like a lot of times when we do investigations, we ask for names or information or for talk to us, and a lot of times they come back and help and things like that. And I said to them, sometimes people might get murdered or die and not expect it, and find themselves, the soul finds itself either trapped or lost, and, you know, somehow they can communicate with us on this plane. That's personally my philosophy on what it is. And I think that there actually are spirits that are not very friendly. I think they're just mean people in life, and they don't want to let go to their emotions, jealousy, anger, things like that. When they die, they stay here. And I think that's what we experience a lot of times in our investigations. So that's kind of my thought on it. And I think a ghost is really nothing more than a word. You know, if you can look up the dictionary, it has an actual definition. But, I mean, a ghost can be applied to so many different things. So if you want to call it a ghost, yeah, I believe in ghosts.
Well, you know me being the chop buster. I mean, well, a ghost is a sheet with two holes in it. It levitates off the ground about a foot.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, that was pretty much the same sentiments we echoed to the crowd that was there. And then it pretty much led to the second question, which went into the demonology. Why spirits, not demons? Of course, you know, we tried to bring home the point that evil will always be evil. Even if you get rid of it during an exorcism or what have you, there's still going to be evil. Mm-hmm. You're really just driving it off to another place. That's kind of not really a good thing, but...
Right.
out of your immediate problem, but...
Exactly.
Well, I mean, how many times have we been told, Steve takes our cases, how many times have you been told that I have a demon in my house, or what's a demon,
times,
or...
A lot of times people call me and they say, there's something in my home. I seen it had red eyes or what have you, and they'll describe it, and they'll say, oh my God, I have a demon in my house, or I think I have a demon in my house. or there's something evil. It's always, I think it's the Hollywoodization of what they're going through, or what they're thinking they're seeing. And immediately something goes boom, bang in the night, and you're going to think, oh, well, it's got to be a demon. You know, I've seen it on TV. It's got to be a demon.
Well, there's so many. I mean, if you talk to some of the people, especially like Zaphis and other people who say that they're demonologists, some people tell you that a demon was never human. It was never, you know, it never existed in this plane. So it's some other type of being that's so negative and so hell-bent on the destruction of man. And an angel is, again, something that doesn't exist in this plane, but something that's so pure and innocent and good that it inspires people. And one inspires and one destroys. I mean, there was, what, a few months ago, there was that story in, I think it was either Oklahoma or Missouri. Might have been Missouri, where the girl, that teenage girl was in a car accident, and they couldn't get her out of the car with the jaws of life, and some priest came over and helped out. Also, equipment was malfunctioning, and everything ran over. All of a sudden, everything turned on, and he helped pull the girl out, and all of a sudden, he just disappeared. He went two steps backwards, they looked, and he was gone. Never saw him again. So they're calling that divine intervention. Me.
I do remember that. I never got to look into it.
It was on Today's Show and ABC World News and everything, but I mean, at the same point in time, if something like that happens and it is divine intervention, then I'm sure like a demon. And like Steve said, like too many people watch The Exorcist, you know, with Linda Blair, and that's what they, you know, think a demon is. So.
And that's the thing. When we get called in, we have to take people on their word and their merit. I mean, we're in no position to say you didn't experience what you're calling about.
Exactly.
I mean, how do I know? I mean, we'd like to have that on film in some circumstances, especially when they say furniture stacks itself up. Although I'm not sure I really want to be in the room if that's happening.
No.
I have this thing about being touched by things I can't see.
Well, nine out of ten times when it is a demon case, as they claim it is, it's most likely just a playful or just a mean spirit of some sort. A lot of times, basically, they get touched or scratched. It doesn't necessarily mean it was done intentionally. But I think people get really nervous, especially when kids are involved. Then they think that there's all kinds of harm and things like that. I mean, you know, there's a demon in my house. My child's talking to something. Must be a demon. So, I don't know. It's people's perceptions. And Hollywood doesn't help.
No.
I'm telling you right
no,
now.
Sure.
And neither does reality TV. That's most people get their education on ghost hunting from watching these ghost hunting shows. And, folks, I like them, too. I watch them. But again, you're watching a show, a half-hour episode of a show that's probably been pieced together over a two-week period. So
you mean I shouldn't have ordered a Greek re-stick?
So, and you know what? And they might have done 200 hours of EVP sessions before they actually got something. You know, and I don't know. I mean, there's just so many questions out there. And again, we just go in and we, you know, like Steve listens to the claims. We never judge anybody. We listen to what they have to say. They're usually scared, confused. We go in and we just gather evidence. And if it is something, quote-unquote evil or demon, basically then we take what we have to someone who's much more knowledgeable in that field, like John Zaphis, and let them get involved. And of course, they make a decision where it goes from there. So.
Yeah, you don't want to get involved in that stuff.
No.
Takes a special person, and thank God for them.
Yeah, but too many times these paranormal investigators that have been doing this for a few years, not to knock them, but they'll go in and do these blessings of the houses and these sage cleansings, and I wonder if they really know what they're doing. We had a case, you know what I'm talking about, Steve, where there was a gate to hell there, according to the psychic, and then they did some kind of sage cleansing of the house or something.
Then guess who gets a call?
I talked to a lady today, and she was having problems. And she said, yeah, I'm going to do a sage blessing in my house tonight. And I told her, no, that's not a real good idea. Please don't do that. It turned out that whatever's there, it's quiet right now, so we're going to leave it. But
sometimes that's the best thing to do.
Exactly.
And also, I mean, I've heard this from people before. The experts like John Zaffis and stuff. sometimes if you don't want it there, it's just being mischievous or scares you or look concerned, take the initiative and tell it to leave. Stand the ground. It's your house. Get your family in there. Sit down and tell it you want it to leave.
So maybe I should clarify our position on sage cleansing, because I know that's very big. You watch any of the mediums on TV? They're with the feather and the sage. Realistically, if something in your house is, say, bad, not necessarily evil, but bad, now you're using sage. You're giving power to the sage to get rid of evil. That's equivalent to an exorcism. So if this thing truly is evil or mean or whatever it is, you're doing something to drive it away. You're going to make it mad. And that's why 9 out of 10 times, same with the Ouija boards, once you use them, It picks up dramatically, because now you've agitated something. Or open the door further if you want to go with the door theory. That was always my take on the burning sage.
Now, I just watch Supernatural on the CW. They always have those great exorcism things.
And the shotgun with the rocks.
Hammershoff, Himawa, Thai detergent, Himosabi. And all of a sudden, the demons, the smoke comes out of their mouth and they disappear up into the... Down, or actually up in the sky, then back down on the ground. So, gotta love that show.
I don't ever want to see that.
No. Or the black eye. Mm. No.
Okay, apparently we have a caller. Hello, welcome to Paranormal Investigator Radio.
Hi.
Hello.
I would like to know how demons would be able to know a person's name without ever meeting them.
That is a good question. Who wants to take that? Oh, they're pointing at me, so I guess I have to take it.
We're all gonna chime in on that, so why don't you start, Pete?
Why do demons know your name? Well, it goes back to what we were talking about before, that demons aren't actually human. They were never human. They come from a place that's not of this realm. Basically, the same would be true for an angel. An angel would know everything about you. Demons, in a sense, are fallen angels. So if an angel would know it, a demon would know it.
If you don't mind me asking, why do you ask that question?
That happened to them.
Oh, caller, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just curious why you asked that specific question.
I had a family member who had that happen to them.
Okay.
Like a long time ago. I always wondered why.
What exactly happened to them? Can you elaborate a little bit more?
They thought it was a ghost, but then they said her full name, and me and her just always wondered why it would be possible to do that.
Well, what makes you think that it was a demon?
She said it had a really terrifying voice, like the ugliest voice that she could possibly hear.
Hmm. Well, you're breaking up on me here.
Yeah, I can't.
Well, I mean, a little bit more insight to that is, essentially, we've done some investigations and we've done some spirit communication. And Steve, who's sitting across from me, can testify to this, and so can Pete. During some of our spirit communication sessions, names have come out to us. I mean, they've heard my name come through some of the spirit communication devices. Why I might be in a different part of the house. And then I would actually hear their name come through while they were in a different part of the house. And I think a lot of times that spirits around probably know more what's going on than you think. I mean, obviously, when we do spirit communication, they can hear us in order to communicate back to us. We don't know how, but they do. So, I mean, it could just be a spirit trying to reach out to you by your full name. Doesn't necessarily have to be a demon.
And to go along with that a little further, to go along with that a little further, if it's actually a demon, we begin a specific set of questioning. At least I do. They bring me out. It's like we said earlier, basically if a person is a jerk when they're alive, they're probably a little worse once they're free of their body, that there's no confines or constraints. But if it's an actual demon, I'll break out in Latin. I'm not afraid to go rapping in Latin right out there. I'll start asking, Quod nomen mehias, what is your name? Quis et Deus, who's like God? If it truly is a demon, then you're going to really upset it. That's at that point, that's when you would actually bring clergy into something like that. But when we use the Frank's box or the spirit box communication, it's not uncommon. I mean, especially in the last month, things have been calling out our first and last names left and right.
How about Alex?
And we even have a team member, we can't even pronounce his name, and it came out clear as day.
Yep.
Yeah, I think most likely, what you experienced is possibly you were in a location that had paranormal activity, and possibly there was a spirit there that somehow understood and found out the name and just called out to you. Did you hear it on a device, or did you hear it with your own ears?
I did not hear it.
Okay.
It was from another family member that told me about it.
It's not uncommon when we do investigations that we'll be walking, all of a sudden we'll hear things like, over here, or, you know, like,
hello,
or please help me. We'll hear it in our ear coming from to the left or right of us without actually hearing it through a device like a digital recorder. So that's not that uncommon of a thing. Now, if it was asking for names and then all of a sudden people are getting scratched up and a lot of other bad stuff was happening, then I would basically be more concerned that possibly could be something, again, possibly something demonic.
Random foul smell.
Can I ask another question?
Absolutely.
Do you think it would be possible for, like, evil spirits to trap other spirits and not let them go in a way? Does that make any sense?
Yes, there's where we always get into the split. A lot of groups out there are quick to jump on the demon bandwagon, excuse me, that everything that happens in the paranormal is a demon. Demons are incredibly rare. I mean, to actually encounter a demon, even some of your more seasoned guys that have been doing this 30 plus years, they have maybe 5-10 real demon cases.
It's usually someone who is starting to come possessed or... there's a whole bunch of stages before you actually become possessed.
And it's invited in. You have
exactly.
To physically allow it into your life.
Right. For a demon to randomly show up and say someone's name is very, very unlikely. Very, 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 very rare, if non-existent.
Not to quote Hollywood, I'm sorry, guys, but like the movie that just came out, The Conjuring, it opens up with the doll where the Warrens go in to investigate. And the ladies both said that, well, we asked it to possess the doll. It could live in the doll. And the Warrens pretty much had told them, you invited it in.
Yep.
It's here for you. It's not here for the doll. So, I mean, that's why we always say, like, the sage burning was mentioned, Ouija boards. There's always a direct door that's opened to allow them in.
Right. We did a case not too long ago where during our investigation in our spirit communication sessions, it came through and told us that it was invited here by the homeowner, and it said the homeowner's name. So,
several times,
and told us what it was doing there.
And it was an incubus.
And it was an incubus, and it said it was an incubus. So, if someone's experienced something demonic or something evil like that, like Pete said many times, they've invited it in. To go back to what you said before about can other spirits prevent other spirits or take over or hold other spirits hostage, whatever, something along those lines. We did an investigation where we were talking to a child. Remember this one, Pete?
Yes.
And there was another spirit there. He came back. His name was Tom. And this spirit, Tom, was not letting the younger child spirit leave. Basically, we were trying to get the child spirit to go to the light. And the other spirit was trying to prevent it by, no, stay with me. But after we did a full-on deliverance, we were able to get the child to go to the light. And we never heard back from that spirit, Tom, again. So I think in some respects, in that realm, a spirit can become, say, lonely and see the aura or the light, especially if a child spirit. It must be a very bright aura, a very bright light, and want to go to that and essentially try to keep it there. At least that's been our experience with the one investigation that we did.
And then again, in our 12 years of doing this as a group, I mean, that was really our first one where we actually ever heard anything talk about the light.
Yeah, that was
in going into the light.
Yeah, and that was an actual investigation we did with John Zaffis, who is a demonologist and paranormal investigator for over 30 years. So that was pretty rare that that happened. It was pretty amazing and powerful when it did happen.
And although like movies like The Exorcist or Hollywood Eyes, if that's really a term, they do show the actual stages as diluted as it is. There was a door open, the Ouija board, then it starts taking over the person, then it takes over the house and the family until clergy's called in. But as far as that, I mean, from what I'm hearing, I mean, I wouldn't worry about that. It's more likely just something trying to scare you. And that is something we encounter, too. Steve can attest to this. Like we were talking about the incubus, it was telling us his name was Leviathan, Beelzebub, Satan once or twice.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't mean that's actually who it is.
No, it would never reveal his name like that. Yeah. Scare tactic.
There was this thing that happened. My friend used to say that she'd see demons in her sleep. And I remember one time me and her tried calling it. And nothing happened. But do you think anything could possibly happen? And what I should do if something were to happen?
Well, what do you mean by calling it? I'm assuming you didn't pick up your iPhone and dial it. What do you mean by calling
it? No. I don't... We just... asked, like, it was so stupid in a way, but it still terrifies me to this day. I'm just curious about it.
What happened after you called it?
Nothing.
Most likely not.
I mean, during the stages of possession, I mean, it will take over, then you start having dreams about it, and so on and so forth. But just a random one-time dream, I mean, I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay, thank you.
And like we... The stages of demon possession, I mean, there's specific stages. It starts with foul smells. It starts with scratching on the body, random bleeding or body fluids, the swearing, people talking in random languages they don't know, and then it just progressively gets worse and worse until they're levitating off their bed and throwing up green soup. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's
but
how
there are. There are various stages that lead to. And any you ever feel freaked out by that? I mean, we always say call one of your clergy of whatever particular faith you are and just talk to them, and a lot of times they'll be more than happy to do a baptism or a blessing of the house. Usually that works, right, guys? I mean, you're in control of your own life and your house.
Absolutely.
If they're scaring you, tell them to leave.
Absolutely. Just say, go away. You're not welcome here. Time to leave.
Do you have any other questions, caller?
No, thank you. But thank you for answering all my questions.
Sure, anytime. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Thank you for...
Have a good night.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
In North America, call toll-free 1-888-429-5471. International callers, please dial area code 530-763-1594.
Okay, so we're back. We just had a caller that called in with some questions. Thank you for the background track there, Pete. Anyway,
normally Dr. Dave does it. I'm still rusty.
Yeah, we usually have Dr. Dave controlling the laptop, but Pete's got free reign of it tonight, so we're learning, or he's learning his way around. But yeah, we just had a caller call in regarding a demon and some questions like that. And our lines are open, so if you feel free, if you have any questions, please go ahead and call us. We'll share whatever knowledge or experience we have. And if we don't know the answer to your question, we can find out for you or refer you, hopefully, to somebody who can answer your question. Like, again, just to reiterate really quickly, a lot of times we get cases when Steve does his initial consultation for our group, a lot of people say it's demons. And because they don't understand what they're dealing with, they're scared, they're concerned, and usually demons are mean and evil and want the destruction of man, where a lot of times it's just something reaching out to communicate, and it scares people, and it could be just something such as someone who's lived in the house or someone that was a friend or relative that passed on. So
how about somebody that was lonely?
Can be that too.
You know, absolutely. And that just goes the caller. Thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it. But that goes along with what I said earlier about the Hollywoodization of the specific field. That somebody hears something or sees something, and immediately it's a bad thing. When it could only be, you know, maybe somebody was lonesome, or maybe somebody, you know, is looking for somebody. Doesn't necessarily mean it's evil.
Oh, really? If you've been dead for 200 years and all of a sudden you find out that someone can talk with you, you'd be
absolutely
quite excited too, I would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's, I mean, of all the investigations I've been on, no one ever really freaked me out was, the one where it came through and said it was an incubus and it was invited there and started saying his name was Satan and stuff like that. But it was calling me a freak, and it actually had some choice words for Pete, which we can't repeat on here. I don't know what FCC regulations apply to us on podcasts, but we're not going to say what it said.
It did not like me.
No,
it didn't. And unfortunately, that one did produce some foul, random smells too. So, I mean, stuff like that you got to worry about. And for investigators out there, you know, as much as you laugh and joke about it, you need to do a cleansing prayer before you leave places like that to tell it to stay where it's at, because that is something you don't want in your life.
Nope, not at all. So, and a lot of times,
even though it is a sex demon, but anyway.
But yeah, and the thing, a lot of times if we come across something bad, like Pete said earlier, it was something that was invited in, something that was asked to be there. So, as long as you're not inviting things in and asking for things to like that in your life, then really don't really worry about it.
So are fortune cookies evil? They tell the future. It's a form of divination. I had Chinese for lunch. I was just wondering.
I had the Olive Garden. I actually went to the Olive Garden.
You
today.
Got in?
I did. Got in. There was one spot open in the parking lot, and I figured we're going to wait there for a while. So as we went up to the check-in counter there, we'll seat you immediately. It's like, okay, wow, sweet. So
you guys want to tackle another question from the question and answer session?
Yeah.
This one actually disturbed us. We actually had to take a few minutes to compose thoughts to answer this person. What happens at the exact moment of death? And what happens if you come back?
What happens the exact moment of death? And what happens when you come back?
We asked for an expansion on that. They went into the metaphysical silver cord. If the belief is the minute you die, the cord is severed, your spirit is now free from the body. Can your spirit come back into the body? That was the question that they'd asked.
Or is it a different spirit? That's a good question. Again, any answer we give would just be hypothesizing.
Absolutely.
We really don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah,
really
we
don't. The only thing I can say is,
see what I mean? They were good questions.
Yeah, I saw some video footage of someone at the time of dying, and they showed the soul sitting up on the body. Now, if that was actually real photography and wasn't something that was photoshopped or messed with, then that leads me to believe, based on that the soul left the body when it died. And the body, there's been studies where the bodies were weighed at the time of death, and they actually lost weight, a small, minute amount of the soul, which they feel is the soul. But what happens when you come back? I had my own personal experience when I was almost had congestive heart failure, and I was in the ambulance being rushed to another hospital from the hospital I was at, and they injected me with something to slow my heart down. It was going to explode, and I think they gave me a little too much of it, because I remember getting to the hospital and the doctor going absolutely crazy on the tube. EMP, you almost killed him, you know. So I got the feeling that they did something wrong. But anyways, when it happened, I remember blacking out when they gave me the injection. I remember being very, very calm, and I remember basically hearing everything, but feeling like I was floating up above, very, very peaceful and calm. I couldn't see anything. And then it was just, I could hear them talking. And then all of a sudden it was this rush, like, shoom, right back in your body and your eyes open. So, did I have an out-of-body experience? I have no idea, to be quite honest with you. But that's the closest thing I can tell you. And I don't know. I think I'm the same person before. I don't know. Maybe I am something else. So,
I mean, really, all I could relate at that time was what my father had said. My father had gone through two open-heart surgeries. The second time he went for open-heart surgery, he always said, I'm a different person. He's like, I don't dream anymore. He's like, I can't think. He's like, something's not right. I mean, during the process of open-heart surgery, back then, they used to physically take the heart out, stop it, put you on the machine, do whatever they had to do the actual vein bypass, and then restart you up. In all reality, I mean, that was the person's question. I mean, if your spirit leaves the minute your heart stops...
Is there a little piece of you that's missing?
What is gone?
You don't know.
Damn, those people were good this year. I would have rather had the scary questions.
Yeah, some challenging questions.
And again, yes, I mean, that everybody in there knew that. I mean, we obviously, I'm in no hurry to find out the answer.
No, not at all.
No.
And it's really just guesswork. I mean, what we do here, we try to figure out these things. But, David last week actually was talking about how they can bring somebody back for up to 6 days after they die if it's a cardiac death under the right conditions. So, I mean, more and more, this is going to become a big topic, I would think, in the paranormal.
Well, then, yeah, then I guess it at least is a question that if you die and they can bring you back 6 days from now, what comes back? Could it be your spirit? Could it be someone else's spirit? Could it be something that's evil? Something that's good? I don't know. I mean, you'll look the same. You'll probably talk the same. Because your body being organic and having all the same vocal cords and looks and stuff like that. But personality and everything will be much different.
It's a new genre of book that we read before. But no, I mean, it's a frightening concept.
But we put so much emphasis on death that it's such a bad, horrible thing, but it's a natural part of the process of life. So I don't view it that way. I mean, I think we, unlike the animal kingdom, place so much emphasis on death as a bad, horrible thing, where in the animal kingdom, I think when another animal dies, they move on. Either they don't understand or they know, somehow they sense it as part of the process. But again, I think our fears are all inbred based on our intelligence. We create our own fear and we create our own problems because of our level of intelligence, to be quite honest with you. And I think that's why we fear death. I mean, I remember as a little kid being afraid of dying. Why would I be 7 years old and be scared of dying? I mean, is that how we're going to live our lives, being scared of what comes next? We should just live.
I mean, I'm terrified over it, but at the same time, I mean, seeing what we've seen, experiencing what I've experienced, I know there's something else beyond what's here. I think it's more like my dad had said one time. He's like, I don't have a fear of dying. He's like, I'm afraid of what I'm going to miss out on. And I think that might be what drives a lot of people's belief on that.
Right.
Like not seeing the grandkids or kids grow up to do something or... We're playing this morbid, depressing music in the background. Boom.
Like the Notebook music playing in the background, but I found the Notebook to be a very morbid and depressing movie. I thought it was a decent story. I'll never watch it again.
But it was a good story.
But
anything by Nicholas Sparks. Candy drives me off to watch.
Yeah.
It feels necessary, I guess, to kill someone in the family in one of those movies or books.
Yeah.
She likes the movie, and I'm over there an emotional wreck for 4 days after.
Well, folks, I think when you do investigating the paranormal, you start to get some experiences. You start to understand more. I think when you understand more, your level of fear gets reduced because it's the unknown that we're scared of. And once you understand more of the unknown, you see things, you hear things coming through. I'm sold that there is life after death. I'm sold that there are spirits, as we call them, that walk among us all the time. Heard it, seen it, experienced it. No other explanation.
And that was actually another thing that was talked about. worry, though, if people come back if they're gone. How do they come back and actually, quote-unquote, haunt something?
You never left.
I forgot who said it, but they said that the light is a two-way tunnel. Come in, go whenever you want.
I thought that you either choose to stay or leave. I mean, once you die, you either choose to stay here or you choose to move on.
Right. So why doesn't everybody kill the ghost?
Exactly. I think that's why.
Everyone who dies then should be a ghost.
What?
But it's not the case.
Maybe they don't have two-ply toilet paper on the other side.
That and another thing that really bothers me, that doesn't bother me, but it interests me is, and you guys know this, we've had a lot of this, is how many children that we seem to get a hold of and contact us. And it's really interesting that I would say maybe half, if not more, are children.
It's because you're such a nice guy, Steve.
Yes.
Your business card is up on the bulletin board.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For help, call this guy.
Yeah.
Years ago, I was told the universe puts you where the universe wants you. And the more I've done this, the more I see that
being a
reality. If you're here to help children, it's going to send you children. If you're here to help older people, it's going to give you older kids. I mean, that's one of those things.
Well, again, good question. Why isn't everyone who passed a ghost? You know, why aren't they? Why isn't my ex-boss walking around the place, you know, knocking things over, doing this and that, communicating to his family? And then you go to places and then there is stuff going on. I think basically some people find peace and they go. They go on. And some people don't. And like, say a child dies, just dies, and gets hit by a car or whatever horrible, tragic way, and they don't know where they are. Body dies, the soul goes on, doesn't know what to do. You know, it's help. What do I do? It's lost. It's sad, but, you know, that's how I look at it. You know?
Handicapped people, children.
Absolutely.
And I believe they do attain that higher level of intelligence once they pass on. I mean, they may only be 3 or 4 months old or what have you, but I do believe that they're fully grown.
These people have gifts. The ability to communicate. That's why they are communicating. They're not just normal people. Now they had an extra sense. After they perished, they learned how to use it. So many questions. If anyone could answer these questions, you would be a multi-gazillionaire, and you'd be on every talk show and every lecture hall across the world. So,
well, now that we've depressed everybody and they're out there heavily drinking. So before we got about maybe 10 minutes or so, we should talk about the huge schedule we got coming up for the next month or so.
Go for it.
Halloween season.
Yes.
The busiest time of the year.
Next week is a private investigation. We'll be investigating one of the more illustrious places in our area. We've tried to get into for a long time. Don't know if we could get back in again. Sorry you won't be here, Rich. We tried getting it earlier for you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But we will push to get back in there again. Hopefully we'll have some interesting stories for the next...
Absolutely.
Time, October 5th, the Hulbert House will be hosting their annual daytime ghost tours. A couple of us will be up there and plugging away at our favorite place. Then we have a presentigation on October 12th at the Shops at the Finish Line.
For those of you who don't know what a presentigation is, it's our cute little way of saying it's a presentation with an investigation. So... the RIP group will be presenting on paranormal investigating, showing you techniques and equipment, and sharing evidence with you, experiences, how we got started. And afterwards, we'll break down and do an actual investigation of a place with claimed paranormal activity.
Now, I went in there for the preliminary. It's a massive three-story building, part of what used to be the old Globe Mills linen mill complex. That was in Utica, New York. It's actually right across from Serenade Brewery. Tickets are $5 just for the lecture. We're well worth it. Kind of enjoy it. You know what I mean?
We know people. What's the date on that again, Pete?
That is October 12th. It's a Saturday. A full investigation ticket, which you're limiting at this point to 40 people, is $30. Now, last year it was done. The tickets sold out rather quickly. This is our actual first public announcement of the event. And that'll be coming up on our website and Facebook pages, links to buy tickets. Now, just having walked through there, I mean, I got those feelings, you know, the feelings I'm talking about, especially on the third floor.
Cramping and sweats? Oh, no. Wrong feeling.
No. I didn't have beef jerky that day. No. The following weekend, we'll be helping out our friends at Fort Ontario. On Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th, they'll be hosting a ghost tour again of the historic Fort Ontario.
I think I can do the October 12th one, Pete.
Ooh, can you?
Sorry, listeners. I'm going through my schedule here, and it's important. Yeah, I think I will be able to do the October thing in the shops.
Well, we'd love to.
Pumped. I am totally pumped. Folks, so Rich, you got to buy a ticket to come see me. Come on.
So Rich will be doing the presentation.
Yeah, share some love.
And don't forget to ask for his autograph when you see him.
That's awesome. We always love Rich.
Pretty big deal.
Absolutely.
He's the man behind Scaricon.
That's right.
Well, please. Please don't tell people that. All the people who are upset with the event will be. So, you're the guy from Scaricon. Who told you that?
His email is not. Then we have Friday, October 25th. I'm finalizing this date. This one's going to be up there in Gloversville in Fulton County.
November 5th?
October 25th.
I will be available for that, too.
That is in a historic location, and it'll be another presentation, tickets, investigation. That money will be going towards the Fulton County Historic Society. I just have to solidify that one. Then we have the historic Hubbard House Haunted Sleepover. Steve knows all about that.
That is fun. That is fun.
When's that?
The 26th.
I'm available for that, too.
Wow.
And actually, because of Scaricon...
I'm not. My wedding anniversary.
That's right.
I don't think your wife would like that. I
have a wedding that day.
I'm going to the Hubbard House for our anniversary. You want to go out to dinner?
I double booked us that weekend. Also on the 26th and 27th, we'll be at Shopping Town Mall out in Clay, New York. Bob Canino and his crew are putting on a science fiction paranormal psychic fair right in the mall. And we'll be doing some lectures and book signings. It's the first time event for that. The mall is pumped to have a pre-Halloween event.
I just got to write a book and I'm all set.
We could do it. We only need 2 or 3 days. I'm also solidifying 2 other dates. One will be in Chemung County.
Chemung.
Where's that?
I don't know.
Chikung. Yeah.
And another one up in Jefferson County we're working on. So Rip may be all over the map here during October.
If you were interested in getting a franchise deal from RIP, please email Pete. At franchisedeal@romeinvestigatorsoftheparanormal.com.
And then we have a few dates in November open. We also have the Westernville Historical Society on November 14th. We'll be doing a presentation.
Sweet. I won't be here, but cool. Oh, wait a minute, folks. Hold the press.
Everyone complained that I didn't have a full schedule last year. You're going to have paranormal coming out your eyeballs this time.
What was that last date, Pete? I'm sorry.
November 14th.
Oh,
again,
goodness, I will be here.
We'll keep updating the Facebook pages.
So, folks, come out and see some of our stuff and help the local community with some of these events by buying a ticket and help us educate the public on the paranormal. Knowledge is power. The more you know about this subject, the better equipped you'll be able to deal with it if you're ever in a situation where you think, like the caller earlier today, about dealing with a demon or something like that. And It's investigating the paranormal is fun. It's exciting. It's something that obviously we're all into it. That's why we have the group. But you know, come down and see with us. We're actually fun people to hang out with too, by the way. And we'll show you how to use some really cool equipment because we're all tech geeks, of course. And we'll take in some haunted locations and we'll see what we can come up with. So please, by all means, join us for some of these investigations and presentations.
Actually, you may not even know about this. David solidified the first weekend of November for Moravian. We got a reinvestigation of that very interesting house.
Yeah, I will be out of town. I'll be in Connecticut, but yes, that's actually very nice.
Yes.
And this would be a good chance to break in some of our new investigators, the six new ladies and gentlemen that are with us. I think they're going to get their full of the paranormal, whether they want to do it or not by the end of...
we'll know. We'll know for sure.
Especially with a few of these places.
What I've noticed is, and this happens usually after a few investigations, that you end up becoming more noticeable of things. A lot of times you take them out one or two investigations, and you're like, I don't know what I saw, I don't know what I heard. But then if they go do a few times, then they start to experience things. It's almost like they're starting to become aware of their surroundings now. Just start to tune into it, you know?
And I'm being told we're out of time. Wow, it flew by this week.
Wow. Sweet. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us. This is another episode of Paranormal Investigator Radio. I'm your co-host, Rich Nicodem.
Pete Leonard.
And Steve Rosco.
Have a good week.
Stay spooky.
ParanormalInvestigatorRadio.com. Until next time, happy hunting and stay spooky.